we go. Oh, baby, welcome to Duck It Motherfucking Dialogue.
Oh, man, that was pretty good.
Going hard here. All right, we're back, baby.
Back, yeah. For them, it's probably, well, are you going to put a commercial in that spot, maybe?
Yeah, it'll just be like a seamless
just
thing.
Just be a little seamless thing, yeah.
Like, you didn't go anywhere.
We didn't go anywhere. We have not gone anywhere, y'all.
Well, I have taken a few, like, clips, so I have an ad that I have, like, I'll put the intro, I just put the whole recording, and then I'll put, like, an intro and a little ad space and after the intro.
All right.
But it's just me, like, recording an ad very terribly. Just to give you, like, it's for Anchor, they give you, like, a little script to read, and
all right.
I'm just the worst ad ever, but it's great.
Not the best reader.
Yeah, no, oh, no, fourth grade, fifth grade level, maybe. Oh, terrible reader.
That's awesome. I enjoy doing stuff like this. I've only done a couple podcasts in my time, you know, as a guest, and I've always thought it would be cool to have one.
Yeah.
But you know, it's a matter of for me, like I said, I'd want it first off to be in a space where it's you know, kind of dedicated to that, and I would like to do it like really in person.
Yeah.
And it seems to me like that's a little bit of a tricky thing. It's you know, I've got. Fortunately, I do have a fair contingency of interesting people.
Yeah.
That, you know, and I like that. I like the idea of, you know, not just having the, you know, the big going for these big celebrities and stuff. Yeah. There's so many ordinary people that have amazing stories. Exactly. And great experiences. Mm-hmm. And so much that you can, it's worth listening to. I like to listen to podcasts while I drive around. I like Joe Rogan's show, of course, you know, not every episode. I don't listen to every episode, but he gets some guests on there that are,
oh yeah,
pretty remarkable, and folks you really never heard of either. And you know, and you get to listening to them, and it's like, oh, hey, you know, that's right on.
Yeah. I like doing that too. I have, I try to get a lot of people that I know, you know what I mean? And that I've dealt with and had experience with and stuff like that. And I just find it interesting putting these stories out there, because you see a lot of, especially with people who I've talked to that have their own business or, you know,
yeah,
started their own thing, is the struggles that they face.
Right.
And they're not like these huge famous people, but they're successful in their own right.
For sure.
And it's good for people to see normal people going through these struggles and coming out on top.
And is it just me, or do you feel like there is a larger entrepreneurial spirit here in Texas?
I just feel like in general.
And
the way that society is moving, especially with the pandemic, I feel like people who had an interest or had a thought into doing it
gave them an opportunity
because, right, they either got laid off or fired or something.
Yeah. See, for me, it went the other way.
Oh, interesting.
Because I was doing what I'd always wanted to do. Mm. And then they said I couldn't do it anymore.
That was tough.
And so yeah. I actually took a gig with a really exploitative freelance writing company, writing ads for radio scripts, you know, and it's competitive, you know, yeah, like, so it's you against whoever else is signed up to write this ad, and whoever gets it in first and gets selected gets paid.
Ah, okay.
And I wrote an ad that aired all over the country for Planet Fitness, and it was fucking straight up propaganda about COVID and masks and what we're doing to keep you safe. And I'm basically doing public relations.
Yeah.
For Planet Fitness. And I got paid $33.
Oh,
and it aired all over the country. And I said, you know what? And I heard it on the radio, and I'm like, I'm going to stop doing this. Cause you know, I thought I was building a portfolio. Like, yeah, I wrote this script and this one made it onto, you know, national airwaves and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I was glad I had my first one that actually went out on national airwaves. And $33 is a slap in the face. And even if it only took me 10 minutes to write the thing, the fact that there was, you know, how much money was in that, mm-hmm, you know, how much money Planet Fitness paid, you know, how much money the label got, yeah, paid. And yeah, then for me to actually be the one who sat down and poured my creative essence into this propaganda that I did not believe in, it was, no, I'm not doing, yeah, this anymore.
It's like the person who did the Nike logo, they got like $50 for it.
Oh my god, it's like that, man. It's like that, you know. And in Nashville, you know, you know of course there's the union, there's a musicians union, and I'm not really sure where I feel about that, because I know some of these venues that only hire musicians that are union musicians, they hire them, they pay them at scale, and they're fucking terrible. And you walk in and it's like, how did these people get a gig? Well, they're in the union. Well, how do I get this gig? You can't unless you join the union. It's like, well, this is
that's a racket.
You know, but you can get healthcare better and you have lawyers that can, like, I just want to play music and make money, you know, like I want to do what I love and be successful. And I do not want to be rich, nor do I want to be famous. Yeah. Really. I don't think I could handle that. I see, you know, and I'm not saying that I would go the Kurt Cobain route, but you know, he said that, like, I don't think I can do this. I don't want to be, you know, famous like that.
Yeah.
That's probably part of the reason I don't really put out my own music too much either. I'm good at doing covers. I'm good at working a crowd a little bit. I'm decent at it. I'm not the best. I'm not the best guitar player. I'm not the best singer.
Well, you're doing what makes you happy.
But I do. I love it, man. Mm-hmm. I love that I get to play music for a living. And when I was a kid, you know, the internet first came out, and you'd fill out your form for something like Yahoo Mail, right? AOL Mail or whatever. And, you would have the occupation tab in there. My ass always selected musician. I was obviously not, you know, even old enough to be really registering for these things by myself. I'm faking my age. Might as well just put in.
Because you're going on those sites that you shouldn't be.
My dream occupation. Yeah, wherever. You know, I mean, I think even to start an email, you know, back in the day, you had to be 18 or up. I thought, I don't know, I could be wrong, but
so was that something that was always in your mind, the musician role?
Yeah, I mean, I'm one of those people that's music is just in me. I, you know, the thing about musicians, man, is like some of the best musicians, as far as their ability to play the notes, some of the fastest musicians and most accurate playing musicians, they don't have the heart.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's a blend. There has to be a blend. And I started with the heart. I was born with the heart. I had to teach myself to play the music.
Yeah.
But I've always had the feeling behind music. The music is a whole nother language in the way that you express.
Yeah.
You know, things get louder, softer, harder, faster, slower, crescendo, decrescendo, all of that. You know, the way that notes are played is, you know, you can play the same note a whole bunch of different ways.
A million different ways.
Yeah. And so the ability to do that is, I believe that's what I like in other musicians as well. I can see it. I can hear it. You can feel it. When somebody has that, that's the thing that really makes it work. And I'm fortunate to have just been born with that.
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of my calling, you know.
You said you picked up like the tab and so, or the Metallica stuff. Was that like, what was there a certain moment where you were like, I want to do that, or that like a song or someone you saw? Or
yeah, I mean, well, I mean, as a kid, you know, it's kind of like, I think, well, so the idea of playing music was always with me, but there were times where, you know, like when I first started taking Taekwondo, I'm thinking, oh, I want to be a gold medalist, you know? Yeah. And then when I first started playing baseball, it's like, oh man, I want to be behind the plate, you know, playing for the Texas Rangers, you know? And things like that have always, you know, when you're a kid, you kind of go through those, but musician was the thing that was just kind of always there,
like, you know, kept pulling you.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, man, like when I joined the army and I'd get my hands on a guitar down range, people would be like, Doc, what the hell are you doing here?
You were
like,
that guy, huh?
You should be playing in a bar somewhere, making money playing music. Why are you here? And I'm like, dude, it ain't that easy. Like, and I didn't know, cause I'd never tried.
Yeah.
But I had no inclination that I should try, because I had a family to take care of. And, you know, and to me, that was the idea of being a musician as a pipe dream.
Yeah.
You know, to make a living playing music. And I can tell you, it's not glamorous.
No.
It's not great. And for a lot of these musicians that are out there that, you know, I mean, to even have gigs is great, but you're poor, you know, you don't make a ton of money, mm-hmm. At least until you get established enough to where people are willing to pay you to do it. You know, once you start getting calls for corporate gigs and stuff, it's like, all right, well, this is going to be good. You know, this is going to be good. I'm going to make, you know, and occasionally I'll play a gig where it's like, I'll make as much money in an hour as I'll make the entire next month,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And it's like that's just the way it goes. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like,
and that's any entrepreneur.
It's
any
feast or famine. Yeah. Yeah. Feast or famine. And, you know, and, the feast doesn't ever last too long, man. And then you gotta go, I call it paying your dues. You're doing it in everything. It doesn't matter what venture you take out on you.
I think that's like the beauty in it, though.
It is.
It all came so easy. It's just like the whole thing with like the finality of life, or just the you know, there's a limit to it. So if you don't experience those struggles, you don't appreciate when you get through the other side.
Right.
You know, and most people see those struggles as a roadblock instead of a speed bump, or they'll see this issue that pops up and be like, oh, well, I guess I can't do that now. And other people would be like, well, this is just a little hurdle.
Right.
You know, so it's being able to tell the difference between something that's you're beating a dead horse on, or something that, you know, you keep working on, it's going to come to fruition, or something's mm-hmm. going to come to it.
It'll eventually come around.
And yeah. That's a thing that I had to struggle with a lot, was understanding the difference between those two, is working at something and being like something, you know, something that's not going to work, but constantly still putting energy into it, thinking that it'll work. And then, you know, being like, oh, finally, I should pivot a little bit. So being able to tell the difference between, oh, I need to pivot, or can I keep charging with this idea? And is it going to come to fruition?
You know? Right. Yeah. So. Yeah, no, that's, you know, that's another thing. And I've had friends who've gone out and started their own businesses. And, you know, of course, when you start your own business, and if you sit down with a business consultant that's going to help you kind of spell things out, they're going to tell you right up front, look, most businesses fail within the first year.
Mm-hmm.
And then you make it to the end of that first year and you're like, hey, look at this, man. You like apples? You know, well, and then they come back and they tell you, well, yeah, but the majority of businesses that make it through their first year do not make it through the next three.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's the reality.
Yeah.
And that's just what happens in most cases. I mean, I've got some friends that are around that year mark right now that have, you know, made it through the first phase, and, you know, fingers crossed for them that they will continue to find success. You know, I just love seeing it. I love seeing it. It's a great thing. You know, they don't have that in other countries, that desire to see your friends succeed.
Really?
Yeah. A lot of other places are very, they're like, you know, like keep it to
jealous
them.
Or, oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, well, so, yeah, it's kind of like Irish people really, they don't want to hear about your success. They don't want to hear your fucking motivation story. They don't give a damn about any of that, you know, like, don't waste their time with that nonsense, you know, whereas Americans are like, really? Oh, that's so interesting. Yeah, that's so cool. Good for you. You know,
I don't know the mentality. Like that's what America is, though, is the,
it's founded on that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's founded on that. Or, well, it was intended to be that. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that there's been elements of that have existed all along.
Oh yeah.
In America. But I'll tell you what, America is a sore spot with me right now. I love the United States, and I'm grateful, like you were talking about earlier, because I know that I could be living in a place where I'm taking a bath where somebody else is shitting upstream. You know what I mean? But I really feel like, man, things are not, you know, my idealistic self when I went and joined the military and what I thought I was going to do versus what actually went down. I mean, night and day, mm-hmm. You know, here I am with the intention of preserving and spreading liberty, you know, and meanwhile the same guy who's sending us to go fight this war is signing something called the Patriot Act.
Yeah, which
the Patriot Act,
all of our
which is absolutely not patriotic at all. It's the exact opposite. It's so,
it's good marketing.
So yeah, HR right there, man. What should we call this? We'll call it the Patriot Act.
We can spy on you anytime.
We got everything, man. We got it all.
Yeah, it's crazy, man. It's a weird place to be in as a veteran. You know what I mean? Because you see both sides of the coin, where most people are living in this bubble where they have this false sense of security and how things are happening in the world, and you know, you're walking around like, if you only fucking knew.
You should never trade your freedom for security.
Yep.
You should never ever trade your freedom for anything. You'll get
neither and deserve neither. What was right. that quote?
Yeah, it's Jefferson.
Jefferson. Yeah. It's those who trade their safety for security for, I don't know the exact quote, but it was Jefferson.
My favorite Thomas Jefferson quote relates to foreign policy. And I think it's really, I don't know how far we want to go down this rabbit hole.
No, let's go.
But it relates to foreign policy. Thomas Jefferson said, peace, commerce, and honest friendship with all nations, entangling alliances with none. Bottom line, with none, right? So the idea is that, look, we're doing our thing, freedom, liberty, America, we're doing our thing, right?
Yep.
And y'all can do whatever you want. Look, we have these goods to offer. We'll trade with you.
Yep.
You have these goods to offer. We'll buy them from you. And you know what? We're going to be supportive of you the same way we're supportive of each other. We want to see you succeed too.
Yep.
You know, but we want to see you succeed on your own. We want to see you pick yourself up by the bootstraps and get on about.
Very libertarian approach.
And I'll tell you what. Yeah. Well, that's kind of, I'm kind of in that camp.
That's how
you
know, I am. Yeah,
I'm kind of, I can't say that I'm not a registered libertarian. And the reason for that is because the Libertarian Party is the biggest shit show of all the parties out there. Now, the Republicans and the Democrats have their shit figured out. They've created a linear spectrum that, you know, you're either on the left or you're on the right. and they're both, it's so funny because they're both just so hypocritical.
Oh yeah.
And so I can't be a part of either of those parties. I love to, it's so funny because I'll talk shit about Trump for the reasons that there's some things I like about Trump, what he says sometimes, not necessarily what he does all the time. There's a few things that he's done that I appreciate, but there's a lot of things that he's done that I do not agree with. For example, Donald Trump signed the biggest check in American history, and we all got what, $1,200 or $900 or whatever. That is the single largest piece of socialism that has ever been implemented by an executive office. And it was signed by Donald Trump, and he bypassed Congress and the Senate to make it happen. He did it by executive order. It was $1 trillion, it was insane. And now we're seeing even bigger stuff coming down the pipes. Mm-hmm. It's not what this country was founded on, you know? And to go back to Thomas Jefferson's quote where he talks about entangling alliances with none. Well, look at what's happening right now. I've got buddies and brothers and who have been in Poland and Ukraine. Mm-hmm. They were in Ukraine just a few, you know, recently.
Yep. I got a buddy that's going there pretty soon.
And they were there training soldiers. And then, you know, it was like, and quietly they pulled out. And then a little while later, this war started. How convenient. And
it's just, there's so much that is, especially being in the military, mm-hmm. you see certain things and you kind of pick up on things
that together,
most
yeah.
people don't. Yep. And it's interesting.
Well, you know, so the thing is that, you know, I'll say stuff that's negative, that's critical of anybody, of mm-hmm. any president, especially.
Yeah.
I truly believe that America has never had a great president. We've had some decent ones. We've had some good ones. And then we've had some ones that did really good things on one hand and really terrible things on the other. Like Andrew Jackson's a great example. He did some really good stuff, I believe. Now, if you're a historian, you're going to completely disagree with me, but you can go take your college degree and shove it where the sun don't shine. Andrew Jackson was very much against the central bank.
Mm-hmm.
He was against the central bank. And you know, in order to have liberty, the first thing, most important thing in a country that allows its people to think and do for themselves, mm-hmm. is you have to have a true free market.
Yeah,
it has to be a free market and barely regulated. You know, like mm-hmm. barely loosely regulated free market that allows for things to go however they go. And you know, I know a lot of people will say that, well, that's you know, it's terrible because the only thing that these corporatists care about is the bottom line, mm-hmm. you know, and that may be true, but you know, I also believe that the free market would shake those people out over time.
Yes.
But look at GM.
Yeah.
GM is a great example because in 2000, GM was the number one Fortune 500 company. And a year later, they were being bailed out by the US taxpayers. Yeah. And I'll tell you what, I grew up a Chevy guy. I like the bow tie. Fuck those cars. They suck now.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
They're terrible.
Yep. Oh,
yeah. I went to Las Vegas and I got me in one of them freaky, you know, tourist thing. I come out and I got an SS Camaro convertible waiting for me, you know, and I'm excited about it because it's got the SS engine in it, you know, and it's zippy. Yeah. It's a zippy car. The fucking thing is made of plastic. It was like, are you kidding me? Like, this is supposed to be a, you know,
a muscle car.
This is supposed to be a muscle car. It's made of plastic, man. Like, I actually broke part of it. I broke a piece of plastic on it. And then when I returned it, I'm thinking like, God, I hope they don't find this. They didn't give a shit. You can get a car from Enterprise and drag it down the side of the Jersey barriers down the highway and bring it back. They don't care. They don't care. Those people don't do their jobs. They don't want to. They don't want to have to spend that much time dealing with it. Whatever. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, cool. I didn't notice that. You know?
Yeah, it's crazy, man. We're controlled by that old Federal Reserve, man.
Oh yeah. Oh man. There's so many. I don't want to go too far down the rabbit hole here. I really don't. I do and I don't. I feel like I wish that more people understood how important the free market is mm-hmm. to liberty.
Yeah.
But I also feel like the people who need to know that the most are so stuck in believing in the system.
Yeah.
And they're also the same people that are running around crying out about how systemic the system is.
But they
and
love
it's
it.
Like, but look, man, you're depending on it. And like, and your solution is to elect somebody else and hope for change. You know, like it's always some slogan. You get behind these new slogans every 4 years and you go through this cycle of perpetuating the system. You continue to perpetuate the system that you have such a problem with. And you believe that the solution to fixing the broken parts of the system is adding more system to the system. Yes, it doesn't work that way. Yeah. It just, you know, it's never going to work that way. Yeah. But that's what we do. And that's what things have become. And you know, and like I said, I love this country, man. I'll tell you, when I go to other countries, I don't feel like I'm at home.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Anywhere I go in America, I am home. Mm-hmm. I feel like I'm truly home. Yeah. And, you know, there's parts of this country that, you know, I might not like for certain reasons, but I can always find something that I like everywhere I go.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, Las Vegas is a great example. I would never want to live in Las Vegas. My dad lives in Las Vegas. I'd never want to live there, not even because of the weather, but because of the phoniness. It's so fake.
Yeah.
And it's hard to find people with real integrity there. Their political system is a disaster. There's all sorts of backroom dealings, and it's been going that way forever. It's always been a corrupt city. Yeah. But it's cool to visit.
Yeah.
You know, it's cool to go in there and, you know, catch an event and wander around and marvel at all the man-made nonsense. Yeah. Stand outside the Bellagio fountain while it's synced up with a Michael Jackson song and ooh and ah, and you know, get yourself a cool hotel room. And you know, I mean, that's just what we fought for, baby. You know, Vegas, it's a fun little experience, I suppose, but it's not it's not somewhere I would want to live. And I feel the same way now, pretty much about the North. I think the farther north you go, in a lot of cases, the more beautiful it gets.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I come from. You know, it's funny because people up in northern New York, they're like, oh, yeah, this is the North Country. And, you know, I'm like, if you were to line up Fort Drum and Fort Wainwright,
yep.
And you were to line them up on the same line of longitude,
yeah,
they would be 1,000 miles apart.
Yeah.
You know, it's like
you got New York and you got
yeah, there's still another, you know, damn near 2,000 miles to the North Pole from here. We're not that far north yet.
Yeah,
you can go a lot from we're probably closer to the equator than we are to the North Pole in the northern part of the United States until you get to Alaska, and then it's another story, but it really is. It's remarkable how many people really truly believe Not so much in America as much, but around the world, a lot of people really believe that Alaska is an island down near Hawaii because of the way that the way that it's on the map. And they look at the map and they'll have Alaska and Hawaii down in the bottom left corner in the Pacific Ocean.
Yeah.
And people just never even seem to realize, like, not only how big Alaska is, this has changed a lot since the advent of reality television shows, which all went up to Alaska for some reason.
Yeah.
There's the one, I don't remember what it's called, but it's got this family. They're the Kilcher family.
Okay.
And they have a ranch. You know, they do ranching in Alaska, which is really fairly rare. There's not a lot of ranchers in Alaska and stuff. And they do, you know, well, that's Jewel, the singer.
Yeah.
That's her whole family.
Ah.
And it's like they got this. They got this gig. Their whole family is, you know. And of course, a lot of people don't realize
she's from Alaska.
Yeah, she's from Palmer, I think, something like that. So
I just watched a thing on Jewel. That's funny.
I was overseas. I was in Europe, and I'm flipping through the channels, and it's all in French, and I come across Dr. D, who is a veterinarian in Fairbanks, where I grew up.
Okay.
And I remember bringing my dogs to Dr. D, and here she is, has her own fucking TV show. And I'm watching it in Europe, you know, like, so man. Funny. So I do think that, you know, just because of Alaska's become more popular in the in the last two decades, you know, Alaska State Troopers started airing on TV. People watch these Alaska shows, the Ice Road Truckers.
Yeah, tons of them, dude.
The crab fishing one. And then there's all sorts of little ones that don't last very long, but they've popped up as well. It's just, Alaska became kind of cool and trendy, and at least from a distance. Not a whole lot of people are still going up there. You know,
like, we'd like to watch about.
Yeah, we'll watch it. I don't want to live there. I love visiting in the summer, and actually, I would love to go. And I haven't been in a lot of years, but I would love to go actually up there. I think during the middle of winter too, winter solstice, late December, or something like that, just for the humility of it. Yeah. Just to go experience that again, you know, like, this is where I come from. This is my background. You know, I'm going to do this for a little while, and then I'm going to go to Ecuador or something where the weather is always great.
So how long were you in Alaska? What brought you to Alaska initially?
My parents moved there when I was 9 months old, man. My mother's father had been stationed there, and she just fell in love with the great outdoors. Gotcha. Okay. And so she convinced my dad. They met in San Antonio in high school, and
she
convinced my dad to move to Alaska, you know, take me away from the sprawling metropolis and raise me in a more wholesome environment, you know? And so that was the move. And then, you know, of course, Alaska had its way. Yeah, no, it's beautiful up there though, man, and beautiful in the North Country, Northern New York. I'm really looking forward to being up there this summer. I plan on actually spending most of my summer there this year.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, I really plan on spending, I'm not entirely sure yet, dude. I do things very much like
on the fly.
Yeah.
So this podcast right
now, that's how this happened. Yeah. If it works, it works. If it doesn't work, I'm down the road, free and easy down the road I go. And So, you know, I love the North Country, just like Alaska in the summer. It's awesome. Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful place. Thousand Islands. I just love the Thousand Islands. I don't spend enough time actually really being out on the river or in the Adirondack Park. You know, I love the Adirondacks, but I also don't like, and it's funny, like we're talking about Texas and Buc-ee's and crowds everywhere, you know. And that's part of the reason I've been down in Uvalde, where I'm at. I really, there's a couple neighbors nearby, but they're not, it's not suburban, you know. There's probably 7 acres in between me and them, you know, kind of giving me a little bit of cushion, a little
breathing room there.
And I'm on a hill, so I have just a view of trees. That's another thing about Texas, y'all, that you may not realize, but like San Antonio is one of the largest cities in the country. And if you go up in the Tower of the Americas downtown San Antonio, it's the tallest building down there. There's not a lot of tall skyscrapers in San Antonio.
Yeah.
You know, you would think for it being one of the largest cities in the country, and don't quote me on this, but I believe it's the sixth largest city country.
I know. A lot of medics down there running around.
Sure enough. Yeah. Fort Sam Houston. Yeah. the it's a huge city in its own right. But when you go up in the Tower of the Americas and you look out in all directions, just beyond downtown, all you really see is trees. You see some, you know, taller buildings off in the distance sticking out alongside the highway and stuff. But for the most part, you just see trees, you know. And I don't feel like it ain't like that in Chicago.
No.
You know, it ain't like that in even really in Houston. You know, but Texas is different. And actually Uvalde is called, that's their little nickname, is Tree City.
Okay.
And there are trees that they have left in the middle of the road as they expanded, and they just decided not to cut down these trees. So it's really bizarre. Like, you get in your car and you're driving down the road and it's like, is that a tree coming up through the pavement? Like, oh shit, there's a tree in the road there. It's an interesting little town, man. Birthplace of Matthew McConaughey. All right.
Dude, it's funny. You've been talking, and the more you get going, and I think the more relaxed you're getting, the more Matthew McConaughey vibes I'm getting from your voice. Like people are gonna think I'm talking to Matthew McConaughey.
Yeah, you know, I don't know how I feel about Matthew McConaughey. I guess it's all right to sound like him or something, or to have those vibes, I suppose. Yeah. I mean, he's not a bad. I don't think he's a bad. I don't know enough about him to know whether or not he's
I think he's trying to run for some office.
Is he gonna run for office? See, I don't know. Now that scares the shit out of me.
They're all jumping on the bandwagon.
You know, that's another thing, man. And when it comes to actors.
Yeah.
And comedians becoming president.
Yeah.
I love to remind people that Donald Trump was NBC's highest paid actor.
Yes.
He was their highest paid actor of all time. Yeah. I love to remind, oh man, they hate that. NBC.
Yeah.
NBC. Yeah. And now, dude, just because I'm talking shit about Donald Trump, y'all, it does not mean that I think Biden is in any way, shape, or form, fashion, anywhere better. And I would say that Biden is worse in my mind. It's embarrassing, but they both were embarrassing. Well, it's just, you know,
it's funny because the media has made it so polarizing that if you agree with anything that Trump did, you're a white supremacist, racist asshole.
My God.
And then if you disagree with anything that Biden did, you're a Trump supporting racist asshole. So it's like,
yeah, no,
not many people are that polarized. Most people sit in the middle.
People kind of sit somewhere near the middle, and some might lean to the right and some might lean to the left. But what I want people to understand is that there's an up and a down too. It's not a linear left to right.
Mm-hmm.
There's upper portion and a lower portion and a left portion and a right portion. And when you think in terms of Democrat, Republican, it's just left and right. But that's all that we have at the federal level.
Yeah.
You know, we don't have too many people on the spectrum in the other directions. But that said, you know, how can you even relate that to people who are completely conditioned to the system?
Yeah.
You know, if you really believe in this system, then you have to be right or left. The other day I was talking with another one of my brothers, actually I was talking with a buddy of mine who was in the Navy. So he's kind of my brother, I suppose, you know, in a roundabout way. He also plays guitar. So, you know, I got that in common with him as well. And, you know, kind of a conservative type mentality. And we're talking about Ukraine, speaking of actors, comedians becoming president, you know, and you've got all of this. There's a lot of corruption surrounding all of the politics in Ukraine. Yes. And there's a lot of corruption surrounding Moscow. It's terrible.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And they're both. Neither. And he's like, and I just don't know whose side I should be on. And I'm like, neither.
Neither.
You're not on anybody's fucking side. Fuck Ukraine and fuck Russia too, like, man. They can have at it for all I care.
Yeah.
And I hate the idea of people dying needlessly. Mm-hmm. And I hate the idea of, you know, genocide. That's not what's happening, by the way. I would not call that genocide. This is war.
Yeah.
And war is ugly. And you know what? If they want to have a fucking war, let them have a war. You know, I mean, and if they don't want to have a war, then they can find a way to get out of having a war peacefully. And it's going to come boil down to
there's no point where we need to get involved.
No,
why are we trying?
And so, like Thomas Jefferson said, entangling alliances with none. But here we have NATO, if we left NATO, it would crumble. Mm-hmm. We hold NATO on our shoulders you know, you want to prevent nuclear war and our alliances.
Yeah.
You know, you want to get the world on with peace. Stop taking sides. Stop taking sides. It's that simple. It really is that simple. And, you know, you have no moral high ground. You have no authority to say, oh, these people are wrong and I'm right and I'm going to do something about it. You don't have that.
Yeah.
Nobody has that. And we don't have it collectively as a nation, even if we vote on it together, even if we vote ourselves to have the ability to take moral high ground, we're just making that up.
Yeah.
Nobody has that, man. So you know, my whole mentality.
Give that to somebody. He's like, you can't just like, here you go. You have the moral high ground. Mm-hmm. Good for you. We've decided.
Yeah. And that's, you know, and that's what's going on right now. You know, I mean, it's happening everywhere you look. You know, I've been unplugging from social media a lot lately. Yeah. I've taken down my Facebook and I had my Instagram taken down for quite a while, but now that I'm starting to go play gigs again, I decided to fire it back up. And, you know, this time off that I've taken has just been very precious, man.
Yeah.
But I've still popped on and like I have a Twitter account. I don't think I have any followers and I don't follow anybody. Mm. And I don't like to, I love to mess with the algorithm. I'm pretty sure YouTube thinks that I'm a Christian black man. I'm pretty sure because I get a lot of that content. I get a lot of the Christian black folks doing reviews and, you know, and you know, that's apparently, I don't know, the algorithm thinks that's what that's I want to watch, you know, and I do watch a little bit of that, but I watch a lot of stuff, and, you know, I'll try to look, you know, I don't really dive into one specific area. Every now and then I'll go down a rabbit hole. I went down a couple year rabbit hole about ancient Mesopotamia.
Okay.
I went down that and I find it fascinating that there is a prehistory that's really kind of just disregarded.
Yeah.
And it's disregarded because we don't have anything really to fully prove it, but we have little glimmers and signs. And, you know, like, for example, in ancient Egypt, the king's list, it goes back to a certain date and then it stops. And they say, when you go take, you know, history, Egyptologists say that beyond this date, everything else is a myth. And it goes back thousands of years. Everything else is a myth. But at this point, I don't remember, it was a Khafre. At this point, we have evidence of these things. So this is real. Well, I truly believe that there is an entire civilization of advanced human beings that were in the Sahara Desert region, you know, not that long ago, 15,000 years ago, they were in that region and they got wiped the fuck out
by something.
And, you know, and there's lots of evidence to corroborate that something happened there.
I mean, I don't get but how they can build those things without having some sort of advanced technology.
Have you ever seen, in the Cairo Museum, there's a few stones that they have facing kind of backwards to cover up the tool marks on them. I like to try to hide the tool marks, but you can kind of get behind them and look. These were power saws of some sort that were cutting through big, giant, megalithic rock. It had to be a power saw. They also had these tube drills. But if you go there, they tell you that they used stones, not even stones and chisels in a lot of cases, but straight up just stones. And they just beat these rocks into submission.
It just doesn't make sense.
It doesn't make sense. But that is the official story, oh, man. That is the official story. And when you go to somewhere like Luxor, I believe it is, before you're allowed to go in, you have to sit down and watch the indoctrination video. And they tell you, like, this is how they did it. And then they bring you to an area where you get to try it yourself. And this is what it was like, you know. You get nowhere. Everybody tour that's come through there for decades has been beating these rocks against each other. And they've gotten nowhere. telling me they built the entire pyramid this way? Come on. And there's a ton of pyramids.
I know.
There's hundreds of them.
Mathematically precise.
My gosh. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I would never speculate. But I do believe that I can say with great certainty that the story of Noah is based on something that really did happen.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you look into the ancient Babylonian text, the Epic of Gilgamesh tells the story of Gilgamesh, who, and I'll try to abbreviate it, but it's actually a rather short story, but it's the first story that was ever told. It's the first story that was ever written down. It was chiseled in stone, and there's tablets from all over Mesopotamia, which is like a 6,000-year gap where this story changed here and there. You know, there's different versions of it, and each little city had kind of their own retelling of this ancient story. But it tells of Gilgamesh, who ultimately seeking the elixir of immortality, you know, trying to find out how to become immortal. He goes and finds this guy named Utnapishtim. And Utnapishtim was told by Enki and Enlil hundreds, maybe thousands of years beforehand, probably thousands of years beforehand, that there is going to be a cataclysmic event and that he needs to gather up the seed of every living thing. So that's what the even older story than the Noah's flood story is based on, the same story. And there's other religions that have similar stories. And then there's this geologist, I think his name is Robert Schock, and he found ice in Iceland. Well, I don't know if he found it specifically, but he believes that there's a crater in like the northwestern part of Iceland, and the crater is down under the ice, but something slammed in there at least 14,000 years ago. And if you listen to, you know, the official story, it could have happened as recently as 14,000 years ago, but it also could have happened
well before that,
many tens of thousands of years before that. We don't really know, sometime between 50,000 years and 14,000 years, something like that, right? Well, I think whatever, you know, if that is the case, that it's related, he believes it's related to the cataclysmic event that literally wiped out everything. You know, there's some really neat ruins. And I mean, some of these statues, the Bible talks about the graven images and idols in the city of Zoan, and that God was going to send his people to go in there and destroy the idols and graven images. And they did, and they're there still. They're buried underneath what's now Tanis. And if, you know, they've been excavating these things, and I mean, I'm telling you, like there's a foot of a statue that just barely would fit in this room, just massive, and it's just the foot.
Yeah.
And it's perfectly carved. It's just immaculate looking. And let's see somebody do that today.
Like, yeah, it, I mean, looks like a laser did it. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. And I mean, this thing would have been pretty close to the size of the Statue of Liberty.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and we could never build that out of stone. Are you kidding me? Yeah. You know, I mean, yeah. And so I really believe that mankind has been around for
cyclical
a long time. And we go through these little cycles and, you know, and I'm not trying to be doom and gloom or anything, but I really believe we are at the beginning of a major change,
a major change.
And I've been trying to figure out what that could be. I had the idea that after what would be the next world war, I don't think we're going to get wiped out.
Yeah.
I don't think that there's going to be mutually assured destruction. I do think nuclear weapons are going to be used.
And there will be some.
And there will be some really terrible events, and you know, that make 9/11 look like child's play.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately that will end, and we'll be confronted with the globalism, truly. Mm-hmm. I mean, because we have to. At this point, the human race is connected all the way around the planet. And so what I kind of envision is areas where, instead of having, you know, like we have our individual state flags, instead ideology flags, you know, so if you follow this ideology and this ideology, this area where we fly these flags out front of the, you know, town center or whatever, this town is devoted to that mentality. You can come here and be free to practice these things, but you can't do this, that, or the other. But you can, if you want to, if you're with us and you come here, you know, I really think that once everybody is displaced, and that's the other thing that has to happen, is people have to be displaced And I don't know if it's better or worse. It's just, it just seems to me to be coming. Yeah. It just seems like
that's just that something's about to break. Something's about to give, that something right. needs to change. It's and just so
when everybody gets displaced, now they need to figure eventually they'll need to resettle.
Yep.
You know, and do you know, in some cases you're not going to be able to go back to where you came from if you were lucky enough to even get out.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and in other cases, and I think, you know, we're already seeing, we've seen a lot of cases of mass migration lately, you know, and refugees and stuff. And there's so many things that are happening right now around the world that are just not getting talked about. Yeah. We're focusing on Johnny Depp right now.
Yeah, Jesus Christ.
Johnny Depp is in a trial with his ex-girlfriend, the terrible actress Amber Heard.
Yep.
And apparently she shit on his bed. Yeah, she shit on his bed. And that's what we need to be talking about right now, folks. We need to be talking about Johnny Depp and Amber Heard. Did you heard what Amber Heard did? She dropped a turd.
Yeah. Yeah, it's
and that's the distraction. I look at Twitter pretty much. Usually I look at it once a day for a very short amount of time. I never post anything on there. I don't follow anybody. I look at what's trending and I look at what they call news. I don't believe that that's the real news. But I just like to see what people are believing is the news today. Yep, what do people think is the news today? Yep. What are they being told to follow? And, you know, and of course it's just that. I mean, we could pop it up right now and just be disgusted by it.
Oh, yeah.
This morning, Steve Martin is trending.
Oh, really?
What because he sang a song in 1978 called King Tut, Funky Tut, born in Arizona, moved to Babylonia, King Tut. Yeah. Anyways, apparently somebody on Twitter said, so God only knows, said that that was insensitive, blah blah blah. And I mean, it's a funny fucking song. And what's funny is, so I'm scrolling through Twitter because I want to see what people are saying about Steve Martin. First off, pretty sure Steve Martin's a pretty liberal fella.
Yeah,
I'm
right.
Pretty sure that the folks on Twitter would actually approve of Steve Martin. So what the fuck is going on? And I'm scrolling through it and it's just all these people saying, I can't believe people are trying to cancel Steve Martin. He's a national treasure. And I'm scrolling through and that's all I can read.
No.
Who the fuck is trying to cancel Steve Martin? Nobody.
It was some opinion piece by
somebody said something stupid and everybody else jumped on it. So does that make them better or worse? I'm not really sure. But the fact that I'm also talking about it right now completely excludes me from having any type of a rational opinion on the matter whatsoever. I have incriminated myself. So, you know, so hey,
man. Yeah, that's how it goes. You get sucked right in, man.
You get sucked in, and there's,
you're like, why are you watching this? And then you're like, oh my God, I'm fucking a part of it now. Oh, jeepers.
I'm glad that we got this microphone turned sideways now, because I feel like when I was over here, I'm like, I need to get my voice into the microphone.
Yeah, yeah.
How do I get my voice into this microphone? And then you bring it over to the side, and it's like,
oh yeah, you came in perfect.
Hi, everybody.
That's too good.
Oh, you hear what they're doing to Orlando? We're not going to have it.
Dude, that was perfect. When did you figure out you could do that?
I don't know. I just did it. I'm not really sure.
Just now?
Yeah, I mean, I've probably done it before. But yeah. I like voices, man. I like doing voices. I was lucky. I went out to Colorado. I moved out to Colorado and ill-advised venture with an ex-girlfriend. And
there you go.
And boy, I thought she'd be the one. Anyways, COVID hit and shit got fucking sketchy. And of course, I lost all my gigs. So now I'm just some broke loser.
Yeah.
Living with my girlfriend, cooking dinner, cleaning the house. Like, making where? Sure she's got her shit together so she can go make the money.
Oh,
you know?
Shit.
And boy, that was a rough time. But and then I was playing gigs, but it's not, you know, I've been in Nashville where I've been. I'm used to being on the stage and, you know, in these big honky tonks that are right in the middle of everything.
Yeah.
There's hundreds of people walking through constantly. And, you know, you're taking pictures with people and you're, you know,
yeah,
you're kind of like a mini celebrity in this little world of musicians. And there's a ton of us musicians and there's a community of us, you know, and it's just this whole little world. And then, And then when I was in DC, I had a booking agent who was getting me regular work. And for the most part, those places had a proper stage and stuff like that. You know,
lighting.
I mean, every now and then I would play at a place that didn't, but you know, and that's, I don't mind. I actually like those gigs. I love playing in a smaller room with a intimate crowd that's enjoying themselves. Yeah, that's my favorite. I don't really care about the big giant audience thing, but it's a rush. Mm-hmm. When you get the big giant audience thing, it's great, but you know, being in a small room. One of my favorite gigs that I ever played in Nashville was at a little, it's called Nashville Street Tacos. It's gone now. It's actually a Taco Bell now, I think. But it was a little street taco place with a bar upstairs, little tiny room, probably get like 20 people in there tops. You know, it was real small, but I had some of the most fun times in that little room playing that gig. And it's all, you wouldn't know it was there.
Yeah.
You know, it's like if you happen to walk in to buy a taco and then you see on a TV screen that there's a musician playing somewhere, but you can't see him. And they're like, yeah, there's a bar upstairs, you know? And if you get up there, if you get up there, you're lucky enough to get a table, you know, because that's what would happen is people would come up, but there's no tables left. And, you know, and the people that are there, they're not leaving.
Yeah. They're like,
you just have a great time, you know?
That's cool.
And, but then I went out to Colorado. And I started getting a couple gigs and I was playing at this one place pretty regularly and grateful to have the gig, but I had to set up outside because of COVID rules. And right behind me was a sign for a GI clinic. That's my backdrop. I'm on a sidewalk standing in front of the back door to a GI clinic, you know, like, and I'm out on a sidewalk, you know, and the people that are on the patio are kind of fenced inside the patio area. And I'm outside literally on the sidewalk. And
so that's like, you're not even a part of the,
oh, it's so weird. It was so weird. And I mean, I had some good gigs there too, where I had the same deal. I had kind of an intimate crowd and it was fine. And you know, that was fine. The backdrop was strange. The setting was weird, but the music and the crowd is still music in the crowd, and that's great. But I happened to meet a guy who is a disc jockey, former DJ, radio DJ turned producer. He does comedy bits, and he heard me singing in all these different voices, and so he asked me to come on and sing some of these parodies that they were writing.
Okay.
And they're good. They've disappeared, but they went out to like 14,000 Cumulus radio stations. Every time we do one, that's where they go. And then they use them on all around the country.
Oh, cool. That's funny.
All around the country. They use them for a day. They're only relevant for they're topical, you know, based on current events.
Yeah,
so,
okay.
You know, we did a parody of smoking in the boys' room, but it was smoking in the Zoom room. And, you know, it's about this kid who's, you know, starting to do school from home. And his dad is there with his shirt half off, smoking a cigarette, drinking a beer, you know, stuff like that. So it was cool. Yeah. Smoking in the Zoom room. Yeah. You know, we did. I don't remember them all. But, you know, stuff that right around that time it was at election season. So some of those stuff are related, but you have to remain apolitical, obviously, because you're putting this out to all these radio stations. You can talk about the event, but you can't make it appear as though you have a side.
Yeah.
And I think I never actually spoke with the producer about what his political affiliation was, but he seemed to me like he might've been just left of center. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, and I kind of, if I had to put myself onto the linear spectrum, which I don't, again, I don't see myself on that left to right spectrum, but if I had to, you know, if I had to take the vertical axis out and just be on the horizontal axis, then I'd probably be a little to the right of center, you know? And, so, you know, it's cool. So that way it's kind of like, let's keep this, you know,
in the middle.
Political.
Yeah, yeah.
And I love that, man. I really, you know, listen, I would not lose a lot of sleep if the time came and I got the opportunity to start pulling the trigger on communists. I wouldn't. I'm sorry, but I wouldn't.
All right, we're going back.
My grandparents fought communism. There's a line in a song I did called "The Forgotten Victory" with Operation Song. You can find that one on YouTube. It's called "The Forgotten Victory." And one of the lines in the song is, it's about Korea. It's about the Korean War. There was a man named Larry Kennard who was the president of the Korean War Foundation, Korean War Veterans of America or whatever. He passed away a couple years back, but he said, "You don't call that the Forgotten War. You call it the forgotten victory. If you look at a satellite image of Korea, you'll see that the southern part is full of lights at night. But if you look at the northern part, there's no lights there at all. That was a victory. We stopped communism.
Yeah.
And that's one of the lines in the song is we stopped communism cold like at the that. 38th parallel.
Yeah.
You know,
cold as hell,
cold. And we did. And the people of South Korea, I mean, dude, South Koreans make the best cars on the road right now, dude. Pound for pound, dollar for dollar.
And the best pop Kia. Music.
Kias, yeah, they've got a whole fucking indoctrination system for the American youth. They have done, they're killing it right now. That's another thing. I'll pop on Twitter and it's like, Jungkook took his Jungkook. I'm like, he did what? What's a Jungkook? It's a, oh, okay. All right. He's one of the K-pop guys. And the kids love that shit.
Oh, dude, man. They're in it. They
the
are.
Kids love that shit. Man. I like the Family Guy where they go to Korea.
Oh, have you seen that one? No.
Oh, yeah. You got to watch that one. I can't remember what it's called. It's got a ridiculous name, you know, based on like one of the translations from something that would be in Korean.
Yeah.
It translates to English and it's really ridiculous. Like super happy fun time. Yeah. You know, yeah, that's a funny one. It turns out that Quagmire was a TV show star back in the day in Korea.
Okay.
Yeah. So he went back over there and they could get to experience a little bit of that K-pop kind of culture and stuff.
I love Family Guy.
It's funny.
That one episode, I still laugh every time I just see the clip where he discovers the internet.
Yeah, he's got the one arm is like ripped. And, yeah, just came out to check the mail. All right, I got to go back in now.
his right arm is the size of freaking John Cena, The Rock's arm.
Veins popping out all over the thing. Oh my god! Switch it up, Quags.
Oh, that's too funny.
That's great. You know, I feel like there's not a lot of really good stuff on TV anymore, and I can't
watch it.
You know, I think that I'm getting old. I think that that's part of the. You know, I just turned 40, and I think that South Park does a great thing on this, and I love South Park, man. South Park does one where Randy's listening to the music that his kids are listening to, and he's like, "It sounds like shit. It sounds like actual shit," you know. And when he listens to it, he puts the headphones on to listen to. I don't know if it was Justin Bieber or whatever it was, but he puts the headphones on to listen to it, and it's just. And so he creates it because he plays guitar and stuff. So he starts going out into bars. He calls himself Steamy Nicks. Or did he call himself Steamy Ray Vaughan? That was what it was, Steamy Ray Vaughan. He's just out there farting into a microphone playing guitar.
And everyone's loving it. Probably. Oh, man, he's like famous.
But you know, I think it's, I don't know if it's Stan or Kyle, one of the kids starts to experience this as well. And even there, you know, all the old music sounds like shit to them and the new music sounds like shit to them. And then they realize they're becoming just a cynical bastard.
Yeah.
And, you know, at the age of 9 or however old the boys are in South Park. But
I can relate.
Yeah, I can relate to that myself. You know, I feel like, it's like I'm getting jaded by it.
Yeah.
I'm just, you know, cynical. I hate to be. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be. I really don't want to be a cynical person. I want to love things. You know, I want to have that good feeling like I used to have back in the 90s, man. Things were great back in the 90s, dude. And you know, and then it's gone. And I don't want to be a cynical bastard, but I'll tell you what, like, you know, that's part of the reason that I don't really want to stay doing the Broadway thing in Nashville, and part of what made me, you know, want to get away from it. And last year I did a residency in Florida and I played at Tootsie's in Panama City Beach, and every freaking, just without fail, people come in and they request, what's his name? Morgan Wallen. And I don't know, the guy might be able to sing a bit. I'm not shitting on his ability. I'm shitting on his absolute inauthenticity.
Mm.
And it's not just him. Florida Georgia Line, these guys dress up in their wife's blue jeans and go out on stage prancing around to 90s R&B, acting as if that they're, you know, it's watered down 90s R&B for white people who are never quite comfortable listening to Boys to Men. You know, and I love Boys to Men. I like the old stuff. I like the authentic stuff. Mm-hmm. And even that stuff wasn't necessarily authentic. When you look at like bands like Boys to Men or All for One or something, you know, they had songwriters writing these songs for them. But boy, they sounded good, and they weren't using that auto tune, and they didn't have the shit canned behind them. You know, I mean, it was a little bit more authentic. At least
the production of it.
yeah. At least there was some layers of authenticity over there. Where now it's just straight pandering.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is, you drive a truck and you go to the river and you get a girl and you got to fuck, and then you look at the squirrel, and then you go to the river and you catch a fish, and then you buy a boat, and you know, it's like this whole
stereotypical
thing.
Country.
Oh, it's so brutal. And I like bands like Blackberry Smoke. You're not going to hear them on the radio.
I haven't heard of them. So you're not like Tyler the Childers.
And Tyler Childers is another one, you know.
Dead South, I like a lot.
Yeah. There's some bands that are a lot more. Well, they're just a little bit more credible. But even then, as they get bigger, they lose something. Like for example, I really like Blackberry Smoke. I really think that they're a great band, very talented band. I love their sound. It's a Southern rock. It's almost like a beefier version of Lynyrd Skynyrd combined with like the Grateful Dead maybe. And I'm not a Deadhead. I'm not a big Dead fan at all, but I get the vibe. You know what I mean? Mm. There's some of that vibe there, and just killer guitar tone, killer sound out of this band. And their songs are cool, but I've noticed as the years go on, I'm not as into them. I like their old albums. And the same goes with it's another band that's like that. Well, I think, you know, Zac Brown Band had a lot to do with getting me into playing country music. And Zac Brown, what I love about that band is they're like an 8-9-piece band. And sometimes they hire even more like horn section and all that. And they put on a hell of a show. A few years back, Zac Brown slammed Luke Bryan for doing this pop country bullshit, and it's all, you know, electronic, and you know, it's not even, the band isn't even playing, they play a backing track. If you go to a Florida Georgia Line, I'm off back on the Florida Georgia Line. If you go to a Florida Georgia Line concert, folks, you'll pay, you know, $30 to $70 to get in and watch these guys lip sync. One of the guys from Milli Vanilli killed himself because he was exposed as a fraud. They were lip syncing their songs. Florida Georgia Line does it unabashedly. Sam Hunt doesn't. They're not singing. They're on the stage lip syncing.
Why do that? Is it why?
Because they sound terrible live. And so the only way that they can sound good is to have it recorded in the studio.
Ugh.
You know, and there's cases where that you can find cases of them actually singing live, and you can see the difference. Mm-hmm. And then you go to the show and it's like, man, this performance is flawless. Well, it's pre-recorded. You'll notice that sometimes their lips move and nothing comes out, you know, like they're talking into the microphone, or other times they'll pull the microphone away from their face and still be singing like, hello.
Yeah, you got caught.
Justin Bieber does that as well. Everything's pre-recorded because it's all dance routines.
Yeah.
If he was up there actually singing these songs, you know who I think actually does pull it off is Pink.
Yes.
She's amazing. Awesome. She is fucking awesome.
Fucking badass.
But you know, just back to Zac Brown shitting on Luke Bryan for, you know, shaking his ass in his wife's jeans on stage and falling off of it occasionally. And Luke Bryan almost ran me over one time in Nashville in this big black truck coming into the Ryman Alley on his way to go perform on the roof at Tootsie's during the Predators playoffs, when the Predators were in the playoffs or they were in the finals. It was a big deal. It was, and then he went on. And I, you know, he's been falling off stages, and I'm like, God, they're going to have him on a rooftop? I don't know if that's a good idea, man. And then he went on to the, and he's a Georgia boy, you know, and he goes on to the Predators pregame show, and he's wearing a Predators jersey, and he knows nothing about hockey. And he's talking about what a big Predators fan he is. He knows nothing about, it's embarrassing. It was an embarrassing thing. And then the Predators lost. And like the Predators were doing well, you know, it was looking like they were going to win. Anyway, Zac Brown, man, I got off on a tangent there. The coffee has finally kicked in.
Yeah, right.
Zac Brown shit on Luke Bryan. And then he turned around and he cut an entire album, a solo album, with a DJ, no band.
and just poppy nonsense.
Yeah. I can't remember what it's called, like the Tuxedo Man or what the hell is it called?
That's so funny.
I can't remember what the hell it's called, but some of the songs on there aren't really bad. It's just they're it's dance music, yeah, you know.
He's doing the same thing that he
did the exact same thing he said. Well, if you can't beat him, join him. It's like, well, dude, Zach Brown, what I liked about you was your integrity, you know. Like, I like that homegrown vibe. Yeah. I mean, that was their vibe, the homegrown Georgia vibe, you know. And then
like every artist goes through that stage, right, though, where they just change, they feel like they need to change it up and do something different.
Or they go out like Jim Croce, you know, dying in a plane crash before they get to the burnt out point, just when everything, then when they've worked so hard for all these years to get somewhere and finally make something happen, they buy a nice house for their wife and their kid, and then they take off on tour, and then they die on the last day of tour.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it happens a lot. It's surprising how often
you throw a Jim Croce song on and you're fucking loving it.
Oh, walking back to Georgia, and I hope she will bring me back. I love it. Yeah, I love some Jim Croce. Yeah, I remember my dad introduced me to Jim Croce right when my right when my parents got a divorce. And it was the saddest fucking thing ever. It was the saddest fucking thing ever. My dad's up in his room with my mom's old guitar trying to learn how to play freaking Operator. Would you hear if I could save time in a bottle? First thing that I'd like to do.
We need to get you outside, Dad. We need to get you outside.
Like, get out of the room. Put the guitar down. Oh, man. Bless his heart.
Oh, man.
Yeah, you know, there's when it comes to music these days, it's and not just music, you know, when it comes to looking at politics, when it comes to interacting with people in general, you know, there's so many people that are they're super opinionated, and they decide what you are.
Yeah.
What you are, not even who you are, but what you
immediately
are before they ever even meet you. And I like the idea of duck it dialogue. You know, I like the idea of having a talk with somebody, whatever, you know, we can have different. That's the beauty.
Mm-hmm.
That's the beauty of this. That's the beauty of this country, is that we can have wildly differing opinions.
Yep.
And as long as we are not causing harm to someone else,
what's the deal?
Then it should be just fine. Yep. You know, if I had an opinion of, that all raccoons should be killed, and I killed every raccoon I ever saw, you know, I can understand I'm harming something, that's different, you know, but, you know, and I use that as an example. There's way worse examples I could come up with. I just didn't want to bring that into the realm here. You know, if you what you believe in, there's a teacher who has a viral video of him talking about how he prefers to be called a minor attracted person, a pedophile.
No, that's a whole bad different animal.
If that's your dialogue with me, prepare to get the shit kicked out of you. I'm not dealing with that. You think that's what you know? No,
you're predator. You are not a minor attracted person. You are a criminal.
Yeah,
and
a sick fuck at that. Yes. And you know, I'm not cool with that. There's a lot of that type of, you know, that woke stuff I'm just not really with. But at the same time, I do believe in systemic racism,
mm-hmm.
because I believe that we have systemicism in general,
mm-hmm.
and the racism is just a small part of the systemicism overall, and that we're all affected by this systemicism. And in a lot of ways here in the United States, we are absolutely as conditioned as the North Koreans.
Oh yeah.
You know, North Koreans see themselves as, you know, they're stuck in this little world where they're under dear leader, and they have posters of him inside of their house, and they say thanks to him every day before they eat their two beans and three grains of rice.
Yeah.
And you know, but they're conditioned inside of that world, and you know, they don't know no better. And we're conditioned inside of the world of you know, Nikes and big screen TVs,
oh,
and
yeah,
iPhones, and
we have Teslas, our own conditioning that goes on here.
Yeah. And so we don't, you know, we don't really realize that. And what has to happen is time has to pass. And then people have to look back on it and say, they did what?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, they were doing what? You know, you hear about the ancient Romans.
What?
Everybody would gather in a Colosseum and make slaves fight tigers and shit, you know, like, and everybody would cheer that on. They did what? You know, oh man,
yeah, it's crazy. And the more this whole thing happens, everything that's happening, the more and more that these conspiracy theories are facts.
Oh, like, yeah, like, oh dude, there's so many, that's, you know, there's so many conspiracy theories that really, really, like, right from the dude, you know, I'm not my Facebook page isn't active at the moment, but I've lost about as many followers as I currently have.
Oh, wow.
Because of sharing my hot takes on shit.
Yeah. You
know? when Kobe Bryant passed away, I pissed off a lot of people. I'm like, hey, didn't he rape a girl?
Yeah. You're like, hey, remember?
Hey, remember that? Like, didn't he rape, like, brutally? Like kind of, you know, and then they settled out of court and he paid her a lot of fucking money so it would go away. Is that how it works? Is it okay? Is that goes away now? Like, that's,
well,
okay.
Well, because his political affiliation was the right one.
for the location, yeah, perhaps, right, so. Yeah. You know, you know, it's just wild to me, and the hypocrisy. You know, the folks that just a few years back they were complaining about Monsanto, and I remember. I mean, I was going to college at this time. I was going to college for agronomy. Which is, you know, it's a field of biology that looks at using biology for other, you know, I'm trying to give a description. I didn't finish the degree. I dropped out. But, you know, my whole idea was that I was fascinated with the idea of, say, using algae as fuel.
Okay.
You know, or, you know, advanced ways of doing farming and advanced ways of using you know, biological material for everyday needs and ways that we can go about transferring ourselves from reliance on things like plastic and fossil fuels and you know, come up with more sustainable ways. I'm a fan of that.
Yeah.
I'm a fan of that. But I believe that the green energy movement is a cult.
It's like, yeah.
And that it's not, like, it's not what it says it is. In fact, everything that we have right now that's green is causing more damage than if we would just be using coal.
What we had, yeah,
you know, initially. But really what we need is nuclear, and we really need nuclear. We have meltdown proof facilities now. It would take somebody else actually detonating it, you know, going in and sabotaging it. It could not melt down on its own. Like Chernobyl was, you know, there's no accidents, accident proof.
Well, because they use actual, and they use proper building materials.
There's a really good documentary on it on Nova from PBS. It's called The Nuclear Option, I believe. They talk about how the reactors that they started developing them like in the 60s or 70s. By the 80s, they had perfected them. But at this time, we were signing these nuclear treaties that say we weren't going to build any new nuclear plants beyond the ones that were scheduled through this time. They could use, in Bowling Green, Kentucky, there are fields full of containers that contain depleted uranium. And they're going to eventually degrade.
Mm-hmm.
They have to constantly, you know, they're going to have to go in and start transferring this DU into other containers. Because the container, I mean, they're sitting out in a field, you know, it's just a matter of time.
Mm-hmm.
And we could use that depleted uranium, according to this nuclear option for Nova documentary I watched some years ago. We could use that depleted uranium to sustain our nation's current energy demands for something like 30 years, just off of the depleted uranium that's already.
There's no money in that.
Well, you know, you would think there would be because there's money in energy.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but there's no money for the people who have monopolies over certain forms of that. And that includes the green energy movement. Mm-hmm. It includes the solar and wind. And, you know, this shit would not exist without grants from the government. It just wouldn't exist because it would be, it is unsustainable.
Yep.
It is unsustainable. And it's, you know, without the government forcing it into existence, it would just go the wayside. In a true free market, it wouldn't exist.
Correct.
NASA developed solar panels for applications in space. And when they developed them, they didn't call them a solar panel. They called them a solar battery. And the reason for that is because they need to be doped in order to work. And in order to dope them, you have to run a whole lot of electrons in them. And that's just the exact same thing as charging a battery.
Yeah, yeah.
So the energy that goes into creating the solar panel is you're never going to get the amount of energy that went into it out of it.
Yes.
And this is just basic thermodynamics, man. It's just basic physics. I mean, it's that simple. But even if you go to college, you will be taught the indoctrination that this is what we need to be doing, because eventually it's going to get us off of fossil fuels. And that's important. But
then you're still going to be dragging generators.
But we're doing it wrong. Going through these, you know, creating these solar panels. If you look at the that shit is toxic. What they use, it's called a it was sodium tetrachloride, I think it's called. And it's an incredibly toxic chemical. And if you spill even a thimbleful at a jigger full of it on the ground, it'll kill like an acre. And so they're only 99% of solar panels are built in either China or India. Mm. You're not allowed to make them here.
Interesting.
Because you can make them here, but you have to export the byproducts that are remain from creating. So that's why you're not going to get an American made solar panel. It's like, unless you're willing to pay that. I think Tesla is starting to make them. I don't know. They might not be. I'm not entirely sure. I know they're making batteries now, but they dump that shit in China, and they have these massive valleys that are just filled with sludge. There's no vegetation. It's just mud, sludge for miles, you know, just.
Ugh. Yeah.
And that's thanks to the green energy movement. And if you go online on any platform you wish and you search for China and pollution, you will find nothing but PR about how China is leading the world in the green energy movement now. Things have changed. Yeah, China is the new leader in the green energy movement. You know, things have changed and they haven't, folks. Mm. What's changed is the Patriot Act and the NDAA, that they sign every year. They come up with these national defense bills that restrict more and more of what we're allowed to see. We've been seeing it all over the place through social media, voices being silenced over and over, methodically silenced over and over. And, you know, I mean, I'm not saying that all of these people are right. I'm not saying these conspiracy theorists out there are all right. And I'm not even saying that I am a layman when it comes to this. I'm not a subject matter expert, but I'm also not an idiot. Mm. And I mean, not a big idiot. I'm a little idiot. And I spend a lot of time reading about these things. I spend a lot of time trying to do my best to research some of these things. And you know, people are like, oh, Google it. And you're not going to find the answers.
Yeah, always find them.
You got to go into a library, man. You got to, there's more to it than just what you're going to find online these days, because the results are cut and tailored. And, you know, in a lot of cases, they're tailored directly to us. And, you know, you want to run an experiment, folks. Text and talk with your friends about having a baby. And within a short amount of time, you will see an ad for diapers or for formula or for, I mean, and whether or not you're actually having a baby or not, that's what you're going to see, because literally tracking those keywords off of your phone. Like when you're texting, if you're talking to somebody in text, it comes through. It's just remarkable, man.
It's crazy how much they can see, man. They can see it all.
if you have it, you've agreed to it. Because if you haven't agreed to it, you can't use it.
Correct. Yep.
So you hit that, like,
I agree, because I don't want to read it. I want to use my phone. I want to get back onto Twitter and Instagram. And
and it's like, you know, I like to think of, you know, like Elon Musk, for example. He's the richest man in the world, and he seems to truly want better for humanity.
Yes.
But again, nobody has some sort of moral high ground. Mm-hmm. Nobody has that. And, you know, and it's like, on the one hand, I look at him and I think, man, these things are really, really, you know, some of the things he's working on could do some amazing, literally transform who we are as people. You know, he's working on neural lace.
Yeah.
Where you can, you know, control your phone with your brain.
Yeah.
You know, and not just your phone, but any applications, a thing, basically making us all kind of
androids in a sense.
Yeah, too, yeah. Know? Turning us all into a, you know, some sort of a cybernetic
hive mind.
Mm-hmm. And on the one hand, I think that would be cool. And then on the other hand, I'm like, whoa.
Yeah. Then where does free thought go?
If what happens if you can control your phone
with your brain? What makes you think they can't do it the opposite way?
Like Futurama, there's an episode of Futurama where Fry has a dream about underwear, and he wakes up and he needs to go buy this underwear. And
I remember that.
It's in his dreams, yeah. You know. They pipe ads into your dreams. Yeah. We might be headed that way because they certainly pipe ads into everything else. You know,
sleep with your Meta goggles on.
Yeah.
Oh, funny, dude. Well, bro, we've been going on like for like 2.5 hours, I feel like.
Outstanding. Are we at your longest podcast yet?
I think so.
Did we hit the record?
I think we're at the record.
We can call it here. I can talk for another 2 hours with you. whatever you want, man.
Well, I think we should probably call here pretty shortly. We got to get out of the room here. We're taking up time in the Duckett Dialogue Studios. Anything you want to talk about to end it?
You know what? I'll tell you what. If folks have actually listened this long, and they're still with us right now, if you made it all the way to the end, bless your heart.
He'll send you free nudes if you mention this to him.
Well, the reality is that if they're still listening, they've probably already seen me naked. So. if you made it all the way to the end, thanks for listening, and I hope I see you all out there really soon. I'll be in Nashville for the month of May, and I'll be in the North Country up in Northern New York starting at some point in June, and I'll be there through at least the end or the middle of July, and I might be there all the way through the middle of September. You know, there's another thing I do up there in New York in September with the New York State Troopers.
Okay.
It's called the Troopers Assisting Troops. New York State Police put this on. It's a big fishing derby event for you know, soldiers and wounded warriors and Gold Star families and such. You know, both active duty, reserves, National Guard, doesn't matter what branch, but obviously the North Country is Fort Drum, mm-hmm. 10th Mountain. And, you know, so we do that every year. And this year, finally, I was able to get the New York State Troopers and Operation Song to work together. So there's a whole bunch of songs I have to learn. I've heard them, but I still have to learn them. But this time I'll be performing at that in mid-September.
I'll be up there that time. I think I have a wedding in September. I gotta see.
Let me know. Yeah. Come on out, man. It's usually in Clayton, New York, I believe.
Okay.
And, you know, I'll be performing these songs live for the first time, I believe. So
hopefully
that'll be kind of cool. And it'll be a little bit, I've done this event in the past. I go and I play music, you know, but it's kind of like I go through what I think people want to hear, playing popular covers and stuff, you know. So this will be a little bit different in that I'll be singing these songs that some of the people in the audience actually wrote.
They'll get to hear
their songs come to life there. So that's big for me. I'm not going to miss that for the world, but it's in mid-September, and I don't know exactly what I'm doing until then, but I know I'll figure it out. So I hope that I see y'all out there along the way.
Follow him on Ian Wagner Music on Instagram.
Yeah, Ian Wagner Music on Instagram. Hey, if you want to be my first Twitter follower, it's the same there, at Ian Wagner Music. Hey, I'll tell you what, if Elon Musk takes over, I will start tweeting.
Yeah, right.
I will start tweeting if Elon Musk takes over. I've been quiet on there. I look at it and I don't say anything, but you might get some hot takes if...
free speech gets re-implemented
on Twitter. Yeah.
Well, hey man, I want to thank you again. That was great that you were able to it just happened, dude. I don't know why you popped in my head. I had you on a list of people to reach out to for the podcast. And he's like, oh, I'm driving there tomorrow.
Yeah, I'll be passing through. So yeah, man. Thank you so much for having me.
All right. Check them out, guys.
All the best to you and all the best to everybody else too.
Thank you, sir.